Thank you, Richard Cotton. Since the last election that heralded the so-called Republican Revolution, we hear a lot of talk announcing that liberalism is dead, or at least on its last legs. That is what well-known conservatives like Rush Limbaugh and others would have us believe. Yes, listeners, all we have to do is support Newt Gingrich and, of course, keep on buying those Rush beer steins. And hopefully, according to the plan, when Bill Clinton is voted out of office in 1996, and after we elect a good conservative president, then all our worries will be over. Does anyone actually think that an election or two will reverse well over 50 years of liberal and alien subversion of our government and institutions? The moral decay, the decline of the public school system, the out-of-control immigration, the explosion of non-white crime, or any of the other consequences of diversity? The present Republican politicians usually do not even directly address these issues. It would not matter if the Republicans were to be elected in large numbers for the next 50 years. These problems would obviously continue to grow worse. Unfortunately, we've allowed ourselves to be convinced that liberalism consists of mostly economic issues, taxes, welfare, deficit spending, etc. The fact of the matter is that liberalism at its core has nothing to do with economics. The economic issues that are constantly discussed in conservative circles are only byproducts of liberalism. The foundation and wellspring of liberalism is the fraudulent doctrine of universal human equality. This doctrine states, in short, that a person is nothing more than a victim of his environment, born into the world as a blank slate. Everything that he will become, every impulse and instinct, every talent or flaw, every like or dislike, and even his intelligence, are solely the products of external forces and life experiences. For example, those who believe in the doctrine of human equality state that there is no danger to our nation from the millions of low-intelligence, crime-prone, and violent people now immigrating to and reproducing in our inner cities at astronomical rates. All that we have to do, these liberals say, is to somehow make sure that these offspring are guided into some do-gooding government program like Head Start or Midnight Basketball, and they will eventually grow up to become engineers, doctors, and other kinds of productive contributors to our country. And what do conservatives say? No Midnight Basketball for them, oh no. But they really aren't too different from the liberals. They say, give these offspring a good education, economic opportunity, and maybe prayer in the schools, and soon the Jamaican drug gangs will be indistinguishable from Beaver Cleaver. Modern-day conservatives and liberals both accept the liberal idea of human equality, the idea of the overriding importance of the individual's environment. If individuals are born with equal potential and what they eventually become is determined by their environment, then certainly it follows that the races are also equal. If someone was to remove an infant in the jungles of Africa and place that child into the home of a typical white American family, then according to the theory of equality, we should expect that the black child's intelligence and abilities would be no different than a typical white child raised under the same conditions. If that African baby had been placed in Beethoven's crib and raised identically to him, then that child would eventually write the Ninth Symphony. Place that African child in William Shockley's crib, and he would have invented the transistor. My examples may be exaggerated, but that really is the essence of the modern religion of equalitarianism, which is espoused by Clinton, Gingrich, and every other politician who wants to be elected. It is a false religion with communist roots and with no scientific basis whatsoever. I have mentioned the Tenzer study on a previous American Dissident Voices program. This study was conducted as part of the doctoral thesis of Dr. H. A. Tenzer, who was superintendent of schools in Chatham, Ontario, Canada, in 1939. For approximately 100 years, Chatham, Ontario had been the home of blacks who had escaped slavery via the so-called Underground Railroad of the 19th century and their descendants. The goal of the study was to show that these blacks, living in equal social conditions with whites and attending the same schools for about a century, would have developed IQs comparable to the whites. The numerous other studies conducted up until that time, it was claimed, showed lower IQs for blacks because American blacks were segregated and discriminated against, and had been for their entire lives. Chatham was an exception to that. The findings of the Tanzer study revealed quite the opposite of expectations, however. There was an approximately 15-point deficit in the average black IQ test score when compared with those of whites. The same difference between black and white scores as existed in Alabama or Louisiana. That study is only one of many dozens conducted over the years by various private, public, and military researchers. They are unanimous in their findings. The IQ gap is unquestionably real. Read The Bell Curve, available from National Vanguard Books, for an objective summary of the data. The theory of human equality has been scientifically demonstrated again and again to be false. The interesting question is, why do we find so many fanatical advocates of this thoroughly discredited theory in the academy, in the media, and in government? Another issue on which modern Republicans agree with Bill Clinton is that of the wonderful benefits of third world immigration. The equality doctrine states that the race of any immigrant is of no consequence. Gingrich and Limbaugh and company state that all that is necessary is for the immigrants to be imbued with the American culture, whatever that is, and after a sufficient period of acclimatization, they would then become functionally indistinguishable from native-born white Americans. The Republican Revolution has zero chance of reversing or even slowing the browning of America. If intelligence varies to such degrees among racial groups, then it is logical to believe that other, less tangible psychological characteristics would also vary by race. I'm referring to characteristics that enable a racial group to collectively create and sustain a unique civilization composed of the body of art, learning, politics, social organization, etc. The mental characteristics comprising the natural abilities and tendencies that exist within that racial group. Why does one group of people develop an advanced society while others remain at a savage level where progress is nearly non-existent? Why do some races seem incapable of developing or maintaining an advanced society, even when exposed to, and in some cases actively aided by, more advanced civilizations, while others are able to quickly adapt outside ideas and technologies and then go on to develop them in their own unique ways? Those are good questions, but do not expect a rational answer from a liberal. Their answers will be that it's racism and bigotry on the part of whites, and in some cases Asians, for the inability of black Africa, for example, to move much beyond the Stone Age. The glaring failure to develop in Africa causes severe consternation among liberals, and their shrill calls for more foreign aid, more exchange students, more uplift programs, more democracy ad infinitum, are simply the desperate efforts to cover for the total intellectual bankruptcy of their equality doctrine. For an equalitarian to face the fact that an endless supply of money and assistance will not bring any lasting improvement in a place like Africa would destroy their total belief system and would require a massive philosophical reassessment. The deteriorating social conditions that are occurring right now in the United States are the result, the direct result, of the liberal equalitarian social policies that have their intellectual roots in the doctrine of equality. How did this become the state religion of the new rulers of America? Our ancestors 100 years ago certainly never believed in such nonsense. What happened? To answer that question, we must travel back those 100 years and examine the career of one Franz Boas, whom the liberal intellectual establishment holds in almost godlike esteem. Boas was an academic with communist sympathies and was actually cited by the United States Congress for over 40 different communist affiliations. Communist strategy in the United States at the turn of the last century included what they called, quote, the long march through the institutions, close quote. This meant that communists and sympathizers would infiltrate and gain positions of influence in as many important American organizations and establishments as possible, including churches, clubs, social groups, service organizations, government departments, the legal profession, and especially schools and colleges. In the event of a communist revolution, their members and sympathizers would already have their fingers on enough levers of power to help the revolution along and to govern once it took place. In the event that a violent revolution did not take place, the long march through the institutions would be an alternate road to power. The communists and those behind communism, as we all know, took that alternate road in this country. Once in positions of influence, they were able to help each other, sway the minds of students and others under them, and crush their disorganized and surprised opposition, especially in the academy, where they still rule today. Boas was one of the most skilled practitioners of these techniques. Franz Boas was born in Germany in 1858 of radical socialist Jewish parents. His fame rests on his contributions to the field of anthropology, the study of the origins and development of man and human societies. His education included no study of anthropology, and how he got his PhD is somewhat of a mystery. But nonetheless, he went on to obtain a professorship at Columbia University and to subsequently create what is known today as social or cultural anthropology. Cultural anthropology, in contrast to physical anthropology, holds that external environmental forces determine human development, almost to the exclusion of biology and genetics. Boas, who died in 1942, spent his life energetically promoting the equality doctrine. Over a period of several decades, the pupils of Boas were given an air of authority with doctoral degrees and were placed into positions of responsibility in anthropology departments of leading universities across the nation. The Boas disciples received the concerted backing of the press, radio, and television, also by this time in the hands of America's enemies, as a platform to freely espouse their great opinions on various issues. At the same time, the critics of the Boas school were to a large degree silenced. A prominent Boas student, Professor Melville Herskovitz, stated, quote, "The 4 decades of the tenure of his professorship at Columbia gave a continuity to his teaching that permitted him to develop students who eventually made up the greater part of the significant professional core of American anthropologists, and who came to him and direct most of the major departments of anthropology in the United States. In their turn, they trained the students who, with increases in general interest in the subject, have continued in the tradition in which their teachers were trained." Close quote. 30 years ago, America's preeminent physical anthropologist, the late Carlton Kuhn, minced no words in describing the chicanery of the cultural anthropologists. Quote, "More serious are the activities of the academic debunkers and soft peddlers who operate inside anthropology itself. Basing their ideas on the concept of the brotherhood of man, certain writers who are mostly social anthropologists consider it immoral to study race and produce book after book exposing it as a, quote, myth, unquote, and saying we should pretend that race does not exist. These writers are not physical anthropologists, but the public does not know the difference." close quote. So while the liberal anthropologists continually lecture the public on racial matters through an endless stream of books and articles, the fact is that the cultural anthropologists have no real credentials for such pronouncements, since the hard biological sciences that are drawn upon by physical anthropology for the formulation of racial theories are not part of cultural anthropology. I don't want to leave the impression that physical anthropology was somehow eliminated or absorbed by cultural anthropology. At the present time, the debate still rages between the two schools. Despite decades of equality propaganda, some scholars are still intellectually honest, you see, though the TV-watching and newspaper-reading public almost never hears from them. Who were and are these cultural anthropologists that have been propagandizing the public with the equality doctrine? Therein lies a truly revealing aspect of this matter. The most prominent among the Boas devotees are as follows. Ashley Montague, real name Israel Ehrenberg, Raymond Pearl, Melville Herskovitz, Herbert Seligman, Otto Kleinberg, Jean Weltfish, Amram Scheinfeld, Ruth Benedict, L.C. Dunn, Isidore Schein, and Margaret Mead. It is very noteworthy that a high proportion of the Boas illuminaries are foreign-born and in most cases Jewish. The two women mentioned, Mead and Benedict, were reportedly a lesbian couple. Does Jewishness prove communist or subversive motives by itself? No. But when one considers the communist connections of Boas himself, and the fact that Ruth Benedict, Jean Weltfish, Melville Herskovitz, and especially Ashley Montague have all been connected with communist activities, and viewing this in conjunction with the long history of Jewish domination of the communist movement, it certainly would cause one to view the whole group with extreme suspicion. It would be reasonable to suspect that these individuals might not have America's best interests at heart. A review of the history of Boas and the equality doctrine is an interesting illustration in itself of the dangers inherent in the presence of alien influences within even a relatively homogeneous nation, which is what America was back during the era of Boas's domination of Columbia University's anthropology department. Being non-political, as scholars generally, the physical anthropologists were simply unaccustomed to dealing with an alien group within their midst, possessed of a fervent political agenda and ethnic nationalism, bent upon twisting scholarship into a propaganda tool. Combine the collaboration of a partisan media with the willingness of the Boas school to distort and falsify scholarship, and we see the operation in its essence and as it still functions today. It is a sobering example of the subversion that has taken place in so many areas of American society. Certainly, the subversion continues today and has deeply damaged our society. We have fallen so far that the Republican Party, viewed by many well-meaning white Americans as the nation's salvation, is saturated with the equality philosophy. The examples are numerous. The victory of Proposition 187 in California was a result of the total frustration of Californians with the ineffectual efforts of the federal government to stop illegal immigration. The initiative has now technically become law, though Jewish lawyer Mark Silverman has vowed it will be, quote, litigated for years, unquote, and the will of California's people has been stifled. The initiative would simply prevent illegal aliens from obtaining public welfare, public medical assistance, and access to public schools, and would increase the penalties for the counterfeiting of documents used by illegals to obtain employment. When it began to look like the proposition was a winner, we saw two of the most prominent conservative gurus, Jack Kemp and William Bennett, traveling to California and making public statements attacking the proposition as, quote, exclusionary and undemocratic, unquote. Another example is the broadcast statements of House Speaker Newt Gingrich, in which he proclaimed that we must accept a, quote, integrated society, close quote. Actually, the evidence of Newt Gingrich's liberalism goes much deeper than a few public statements. Recently, Speaker Gingrich wrote an introduction to the book, Creating a New Civilization, written by Jewish authors Alvin and Heidi Toffler. The Tofflers have written several popular books over the years, projecting their vision for the future of society. Two of the most well-known are Future Shock and The Third Wave. Contained within the pages of their most recent book is the advocacy of, among other things, both homosexual and polygamous marriages, abortion, and various New Age themes. Also singled out for praise in several instances is the Liberal Democratic Vice President Al Gore Jr. Throughout the book, they repeatedly make use of standard communist phraseology, and the Tofflers are reported to hold a sincere reverence for Karl Marx himself. Furthermore, targets attacked by them include traditional families, patriotism, national sovereignty, and they refer to a homogeneous population as a curse. They even go as far as to boldly claim that the principles held by our founding fathers and embodied in the Constitution are, quote, oppressive and dangerous to our welfare, close quote. In other words, the Tofflers are espousing the same old liberal anti-American one-world garbage that has been propagated by our enemies for the past 60 years or more. And Newt Gingrich, the standard bearer for the Republican Party, wrote a glowing introduction to their book. If you cannot reason from these facts, if you still believe that the Republicans really oppose the liberal program, then there is indeed no hope for you. In reading the Tofflers' book, we find repeated calls for diversity in nearly every chapter, and repeated warnings that our only hope is to promote and foster diversity in every aspect of American society. In addition to this, we find the declaration in so many words that we cannot stop third world immigration. The long and short of the Tofflers' recommended vision for America is a society consisting of atomized and disconnected individuals of every race, unified as members of a giant computer network, harmoniously exchanging their thoughts and ideas, and out of all of this will somehow emerge a new civilization in the land that was once America. It is just a repackaging of all the old liberal hallucinations of the past, the brotherhood of man, the unity of mankind, one world, the new world order, equality, and on and on and on in the same old tired vein. Like trendy leftists everywhere these days, the Tofflers do pay obeisance to market forces. But then the economic structure was never really the reason behind our enemies' calls for revolution anyway. As the Tofflers and their ilk, both Republican and Democrat, call for increased diversity as the remedy for our ills, more and more white Americans are coming to the realization that diversity is the cause of our problems and not the cure. As ever-increasing numbers of our people, especially in urban areas, are finding it necessary to live behind electronic surveillance systems, armed security guards, and barred windows, all aimed at keeping diversity at bay, will come the realization that in order to survive, diversity is to be prevented and not promoted. A creative, conquering spirit still lies suppressed within the consciousness of our people. That spirit has sustained us since the beginning of our existence. It will emerge again. Instead of conquering a vast wilderness or exploring uncharted territory, we face an intellectual and spiritual struggle within ourselves. After that struggle has been won, the job of straightening out North America and our people's homelands around the world will be easy in comparison. And that is why the enemies of America are so terrified that you might wake up. I hope our excursion into history has illuminated some of the reasons for our nation's troubles for you. Please subscribe to our fast-growing illustrated monthly publication, Free Speech. It's only $40 per year. By subscribing, you will not only open up a new world of understanding for yourself and your family, but you will also be supporting the continued broadcasting of this unique program on this radio station. Without your support, we will have to leave the air. Please subscribe to Free Speech today. Send $40 and write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Ask for Free Speech. Today's program was written and produced by Ian P. McKinney and Kevin Alfred Strong. Until next week, keep on thinking free.
Tune to American Dissident Voices.
A beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for our book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high-fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.